MechCast, Monday, December 10th, 2018. Hey, MechGeeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for MechGeeks by MechGeeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, you may be able to hear it in my voice a little bit, but it is winter. Yes, it is December. I know it's been winter for a little while, but you can probably tell I have come down with a little bit of a cold, and thusly, I think we're going to try and keep this episode of the MacCast a little brief. I need to get in and get some rest. But how are you doing? I hope you are doing well. I'm glad you are back here with me for another episode of the MacCast. We do have some cool Apple and Mac news to get to this week. A lot of entertainment stuff this week, although we do have some software updates, some Apple Watch, an Apple Watch update that many of you have been waiting for. Also, eSIMs are out and available, and Apple has some new accessories for you new iPhone owners out there. So we're going to talk about all of those things and then get into a little feedback, some of your questions. We're going to talk about podcasts and syncing them via iTunes and also on your iOS devices using Apple's podcast app to kind of control how you want those to play back. And then I had a question about Undo on iOS, and it's kind of an extension of the conversation we've been having about hidden gestures on iOS. So that is going to round out this show. Like I said, it'll be a little bit briefer because I do need to get some rest. I know you understand that. So I say let's just jump right into the show. But before we get to it, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Ops Genie by Atlassian. You know, your favorite website, your favorite web service, when it goes down, even for just a moment, it is super annoying. I get really frustrated at night when I'm trying to relax and Netflix or Amazon is unavailable, or don't even get started when iCloud goes down, right? It makes us unhappy customers. But our unhappiness is nothing compared to the frantic just chaos that goes down and the unhappiness a service outage can bring those folks who have to deal with those outages. Luckily for us, those people exist, and they are the unsung heroes of dev and ops teams. And luckily for those of you who are on those teams, you have Ops Genie from Atlassian, because it's your job to respond quickly to these kinds of incidents. And to do that, you need a tool like Ops Genie in your utility belt. Ops Genie gives teams the power to respond quickly and efficiently to unplanned issues. It also helps notify all the right people on your team through a smart combination of scheduling and escalation paths that take into account things like time zones and holidays. You know, we've got people spread out on a lot of these teams, and you need to make sure those notifications, those messages get to the right people so they can deal with them quickly. So those of us like myself who get impacted by those, we get those services back up and running more quickly. And with Ops Genie, you also get deep flexibility in how, when, and where those alerts are deployed. You can control all that stuff, and it's supported by over 200 integrations like Jira, Amazon CloudWatch, Datadog, New Relic, and a whole bunch more. So it's going to integrate with all the services you need. It also allows you to track all of that activity and provides you useful insights that can help you improve future incident responses. So with Ops Genie, your next incident doesn't stand a chance. Visit opsgenie.com to sign up and get a free company account, and you can add up to 5 team members. So completely free, opsgenie.com. Get your company account today and never miss a critical alert again with Ops Genie. And we thank Ops Genie and Atlassian for their support of the MacCast. So it looks like Apple may be looking to expand Apple Music into, I'm calling it Apple Muzak, right? The background music that businesses play. Apple Insider pointed out that Apple has filed a U.S. trademark application for the term Apple Music for Business. Now, we really don't know what this is, but we can take a guess, right? The filing happened back in November 29th. And the report also notes that there's some other filings, or actually the filing by Apple noted that they had filed some additional filings on that name, Apple Music for Business, one even in Jamaica back in June. So they're getting ready to maybe do something, or at least thinking about it. The assumption is it would be a service aimed at businesses and enterprises who want to play Apple Music in the background of their businesses. So think like, you know, a restaurant or any public area. And in that case, the Apple Music service would need to provide additional licensing with performance rights to those businesses. That's sort of how it works. Now, businesses could purchase those licenses separately, and they typically do. They can cost between a few $100 to $1,000 per year, or thousands of dollars per year, depending upon the usage and the size of the business. But if that was just rolled into a single service that Apple could offer up and all included, then that would make things a lot easier for businesses and could potentially help Apple grow their Apple Music business. So, seems like an interesting filing. Whether or not Apple will offer that service at some point in the future, who knows? But it's looking like they're at least thinking about it and preparing for it. So could happen. And if and when it does, we'll of course talk about it, I'm sure, more here on the MacCast. Apple also in music news reportedly purchased a London-based music startup called Platoon. This is according to Music Business Worldwide. The company was actually co-founded by an iTunes veteran, a guy named Denzel Fiegelson, and also Love Film co-founder Sal Klein. The company Platoon was focused on developing early stage artists in the UK and the US, providing them support and promotion, things like that. They were responsible for discovering artists like Billie Eilish, who you may or may not know, but if you've seen Apple's latest holiday ad, the one with the girl kind of claymation style or stop-motion animation style, who is doing creative projects, kind of keeping them to herself, and then they blow off and they go out into the public. And I think it's the tagline is something like, share your creativity. Holiday message, if you've seen that and heard the music on that, that's Billie Eilish. So that is one of the artists that was started out with Platoon. And Apple has acquired that company. Actually, Fiegelson, who had worked for Apple for 15 years, was responsible when he was working for them for artist relations and live events, including things like producing Apple's famous iTunes festivals in London. So he has a history of helping out Apple in the music industry. And it looks like now that Apple has acquired the company, they're going to continue to do that, because the report says the company will continue to operate with the same team out of London. I think they have around a dozen people, maybe a few more. And a source told the publication that the deal gives, quote, Platoon the backing and resources to accomplish its vision and continue its goal of developing original music and visual content while leaving artists free to sign with who they want and distribute their music where they want. So it sounds like Apple may or may not be exerting a lot of control over these artists, but it does give Apple additional access to up-and-coming artists and will hopefully help them woo them over to doing exclusive deals and doing things with Apple Music. And so it's very easy to see why Apple would have an interest in a company like Platoon. It gives them the ability to spot and kind of highlight new and upcoming talent, and that's really critical to keeping Apple Music relevant and competitive in the streaming music space, right? To have access to those artists is probably more important than, you know, sort of forcing them onto the Apple Music platform or something like that. So I like the idea of Apple acquiring a company and allowing that company to continue to operate and do the things that it's been doing well. So we'll kind of keep an eye on this, but expect more new original content coming to Apple Music because of this acquisition. And that's kind of some of the latest in the music side of things. Now let's move on to video a little bit. CNBC is reporting this week that Apple Worldwide Video is in advanced talks to purchase the rights to an Israeli drama series called Nevelot, and language warning here, that translates to the word bastards in English. And what's interesting about this is, if you know from the past, we've talked about Apple Worldwide Video and some of the programming they're putting together. There's been this general rumor and consensus that Apple is only going after sort of family-friendly, general audience type content. Well, this show is being described as a violent and mature drama series, and it's being reformatted for a U.S. market by Homeland creator Howard Gordon and Law & Order SVU showrunner Warren Leight, and possibly will be co-starring Richard Gere. So the show supposedly centers around two military veterans who go on a killing spree targeting young people because, quote, they believe today's kids don't understand the sacrifices of their generation. So it sounds pretty gritty and pretty brutal, kind of dark and grim, and really does contradict that what we had been hearing about Apple really trying to acquire and require their shows and series to have a wider, more wholesome general audience feel. And this was something that came about back in September. A Wall Street Journal claimed that Apple would be unlikely to produce original content that contained things like gratuitous sex, violence, profanity, risque storylines. And it was all supposedly because Apple wanted to avoid sort of damaging the Apple brand. That story's been floating around for a while. I know I've been talking about it here on the MacCast as a parent, as someone who is constantly looking for more wholesome, family-friendly content. I was kind of excited about the fact that Apple was really focusing on that niche, and I feel like it's really underserved, especially in a lot of the original content programming that's coming from other outlets like Amazon and Netflix, although I have been noticing that has been changing. Netflix has had some great original, you know, family-friendly content. The Lemony Snicket's series of Unfortunate Events is fabulous with Neil Patrick Harris, and we absolutely loved that. And they've been doing more of that, and they've got that new holiday movie out right now. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. So that is changing. Sounds like Apple is kind of changing and opening up a little bit as well. As a matter of fact, their two heads of programming, Zach Van Omberg and Jeremy Ehrlich, have been supposedly working overtime to kind of dispel this myth that had sort of perpetuated that Apple was interested in only in family-friendly material. So it's looking like, with this story, they're proving they're not just looking for that they will have some mature audience content potentially on Apple's new video platform as well. And newer reports do seem to be indicating that Apple is interested more in finding different content, and that it's more about finding things that maybe don't fit traditional formats, things that are really original and compelling stories. They apparently are open to most things as long as they have substance and are reportedly not gratuitous. I guess it all comes down to what is that definition of gratuitous, but they want high impact content based on things that people have heard of before, like books. And we've seen a lot of that. A lot of their new original programming is coming out of books. They're also looking for franchise kinds of things and any kinds of ideas that are just going to resonate with audiences. And they're also considering shows that maybe don't fit a more traditional 30 or 60 minute format, and even looking to the future to stuff that could be a little bit more interactive or immersive. And I'm kind of taking that to mean, you know, we've been hearing Apple is working on AR and VR stuff, so augmented reality, virtual reality. I'm thinking they're looking past the sort of first couple years of this where they're doing more traditional series-like content and original programming and moving into more experimental stuff, maybe more art-based stuff that can fit into a virtual reality, augmented reality kind of platform that they could build out in the future. So, you know, there's a lot at play with Apple's new video service. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in 2019. This show sounds interesting. I'm not sure it's something that's in my wheelhouse, but a lot of people probably would like this kind of content. And I think there was some worry that Apple's content was going to be too watered down and maybe couldn't compete with the likes of HBO or an Amazon or something like that, that they maybe did need a little bit more edgy stuff. And I get that, right? They have to compete. They want to make the service successful. And if that is the kind of programming that the public seems to want, and a lot of folks, at least here in the States, really seem to want that kind of content, then Apple needs to offer up some of that. So I can see them adapting. I don't know if this was a change or if they never were in that place of only wanting family-friendly material. The latest reports are saying that the heads of programming, Omberg and Ehrlich, they were saying, no, that was never really the case, that they were just going for different kinds of content. And that's been trying to be dispelled. So, yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed that it's not just going to be family-friendly. But, you know, Apple's been pretty good about putting in parental controls in their content. So hopefully they'll extend that with their video service and just have it better integrated so that parents can kind of decide and control maybe what their kids have access to on the service. Because I think that's generally a problem, too. Like, even trailers and some of the stuff, like, it's really frustrating when Netflix brings up their autoplay kinds of trailers. And some of that content can be really scary or just generally inappropriate for kids who might be in the room. And it just autoplays. And you're, you know, fumbling really quickly to turn off and maybe not scare a child or something like that. So, you know, a little more control over that sort of thing is always good, in my opinion. Again, take it for what it is. You're getting the perspective of a parent here. So, last thing in this entertainment thing, this report also did finally give a title to the morning show drama that is going to be starring Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston. It's going to be called Top of the Morning, which I guess is the same name as the title of a book that the show is based upon, although I didn't know the show was going to be based upon a book. This is the first time I was hearing about that. So there you go, some Apple video news or video stuff in the news for this week. Apple also released a new version of watchOS this past week. WatchOS 5.1.2 finally came out, and it enabled the electrocardiogram feature for Apple Watch Series 4 owners, at least here in the U.S. And yes, it is electro. I may need to make a correction from the last episode of the MacCast. I said echocardiogram, which is not correct, because echo is sound, electro is electricity. And listener Lily, who is a nurse, wrote in to explain that to me, or just remind me of that. And she's spot on. So thank you, Lily. Sorry about that little mistake there. Yes, they enabled the electrocardiogram feature. It's going to take a picture of your heart health using the electrical pulses and the electrical beats of your... I'm probably getting this all wrong, too. And Lily, you'll correct me again. But get the point, is it's using an electrical pulse, not a audio pulse. And Series 4 owners are also going to get in this new update some new complications for the Infograph watch faces. You're going to have complications now for mail, messages, home, maps, Apple News, Find My Friends, phone, and remote. So nice number of updates to the complications for Series 4 owners. But luckily for the rest of us, this update also comes with some things that aren't just for Series 4. And there is a new health feature, a new heart feature that is available to anyone who can run watchOS 5. It is the abnormal heart rhythm, or the AFib detection, and it can give you a possible alert to potential issues. The AFib feature works on all models that support watchOS 5. Again, unfortunately, though, this feature is a US-only feature, and this is because Apple had to get FDA clearance. It's not a full like FDA approval, a little bit different, but they did get clearance from the FDA, and they are looking to get those kinds of clearances in other countries in the future before they're able to roll this out. But just a couple things about setting up both the ECG and the AFib notification feature. You do need to go into the health app once you've updated the software and go through a couple steps to enable these new features, and you will be asked a few questions, including your birth date and some of your history, because there's some folks that Apple don't enable these features. And they say it's not intended for people who are under 22 years of age. They also say that it's not to be used as the only method for detecting heart issues, that the Apple Watch can only serve as an aid, kind of for first detection of possible issues, but you really need to, if it detects a problem, contact a medical professional, contact a doctor. It also says that the feature should not be used to diagnose folks who already have atrial fibrillation issues. That's so hard for me to say, that if you do already suffer from atrial fibrillation, you should not use the application, and it will not be able to detect things like strokes or heart attacks, although some of these things can be early indicators of potential problems, which is why if you do get alerted or notified and you're in a group that can be using the feature, you should immediately contact your doctor. And it's sounding like there's some folks that have already benefited from this new feature just days literally after it has gone out. We've already heard some reports of folks getting to a doctor and being treated when they should have, and it has potentially saved lives. So that's pretty amazing. And just so you know, it is, like I said, US only, and you are not going to be able to trick it by changing your region settings, because it will only function on models of the Apple Watch that were actually purchased in the United States. I'm not 100% sure how Apple is controlling that, but it's the kind of thing where, because you're dealing with health issues, you're dealing with stuff you probably don't want to be trying to work around it. And I would also not advise lying about your age or your birth date when you're setting it up, because again, it's not going to function properly if you're under 22 years of age, and that could only cause potential problems. So when is Apple going to roll it out in other countries and other regions? We really don't know. Although a person in Canada was curious and sent a tweet to Health Canada, the government health agency there, on Twitter, and their response was rather interesting. They said they had not received an application for Apple Watch Series 4, and that they said, quote, "The decision to submit a medical device license application rests on the manufacturer." So they're, in essence, claiming that Apple hasn't even applied for a medical device license for Apple Watch Series 4 in Canada. Now, the how and why and all those things, those are big questions, but only Apple is really going to know the answers to those. We do know that Apple has said they're planning to bring out the feature to more Apple Watch owners over the next year. And the big question, of course, is which regions, which people? And the answer, unfortunately, is we really don't know. So all we can do is wait for more news. And when and if I do get more news, I will, of course, let you know here on the MacCast. A few other features of Apple Watch, or watchOS rather, 5.1.2 of note. You do get direct access to supported movie tickets, coupons, and reward cards in the wallet when you tap on a contactless reader. So if those things support contactless readers, then it will automatically come up with your Apple Watch. You can also receive notifications and animated celebrations when you achieve daily maximum points in an activity competition. And finally, there is a new ability to manage the availability of the walkie-talkie feature from the control center. So you can add a walkie-talkie button into the control center to turn on or off your availability for walkie-talkie, which that is really handy, because that whole process was a little bit buried in the past. So to be able to just get into control center and turn that on or off, that is a nice little update. So if you'd like to grab this, it is available now. You can just initiate it through the Watch app on your iOS device. Looks like U.S. carriers have finally begun offering eSIM support for Apple's latest iPhone models. AT&T and Verizon rolled out their eSIM support last week with the release of iOS 12.1.1. It looks like they are both supporting it on both post and prepaid plans, and Verizon's activation seems to be enabled through their Join Now option in their My Verizon app, while AT&T, the reports I've been getting are that you do need to go into an AT&T store and sort of set up and point your phone at a QR code, kind of the process that Apple actually showed off when they announced the eSIM feature. And for those of you who don't remember, eSIM is an option available on the latest iPhones, the iPhone XS series and the iPhone XR. It gives you the ability to basically have dual SIM support. So you have the physical SIM and then you have Apple's new eSIM. And that way you can have two lines, say one for your business or one for your personal calls, and it will automatically detect and switch back and forth between the two. But when the iPhone launched, eSIM support from the carriers wasn't quite there yet. Now they are starting to roll it out, and you can go in if you're an AT&T or Verizon customer and get it now. T-Mobile, they showed off how you would enable it through their app to PC Mag this week. I guess they wanted to be part of the party, but their version of it won't be available till sometime later this year. They're promising it before the end of 2018. They're running out of days, so I would expect it to happen soon. They do use a little bit of a different process. You use the T-Mobile app again. Sounds maybe a little bit more like how Verizon is doing it, and you don't have to go in and activate via a QR code, although they do seem to be limiting their option to prepaid plans only for the eSIM second line. So your primary line is going to have to be with a standard SIM if you want to do a postpaid plan. If you want to do prepaid, you can add that as the eSIM option on your line. And once you've enabled your two lines on your iPhone, like I said, it's supposed to sort of auto detect which calls are coming in for which line and switch automatically between them. If you do want to get a little more visibility into what's going on or get the status of each line, it sounds like there's a way to go into the control center on your device and take a look at how the lines are sort of activated and working and stuff like that. So I haven't tried this on my phone yet. Maybe some of you have already enabled it. If you have, I'd love it if you would share your experiences with us. Let us know how the setup went, which carrier you're working with, and how the day-to-day usage is, and whether or not this is a big feature for you. I think it's a kind of a big feature for folks who travel internationally, or just if you are in an international region. Like I've heard in Europe, there's a lot of people, because of the proximity of different countries, you might be traveling on a regular basis between countries and between sort of carriers, and having this ability to kind of have multiple lines for different regions is really, really convenient and something that a lot of people have wanted for a while. So this is definitely a desirable feature for a certain category of iPhone owner. And I'd love to hear from you if you've enabled this, and let us know how it's going out there. And then finally, for the news for this week, a couple of new products showing up at Apple retail stores this week. We actually heard a rumor before the iPhone XR came out that Apple was planning on offering a clear case, because the iPhone XR comes in those beautiful colors. It looks really, really great. And so a lot of people don't want to cover that up, but you still want some sort of protection for your phone. Being glass front and glass back, you would worry about it. So Apple is offering now a clear case for the iPhone XR. It's simply called the iPhone XR clear case. It's selling for about $40 US, and it is out and available now. We also did get a rumor that Apple may be finally looking to update its battery cases for the iPhone. Apple released its smart battery case, I think, way back with the iPhone 6 series, might have been even earlier, and they continued it through the iPhone 7, but we haven't seen one since. And this week, 9to5Mac Guillermo Rambo found some references in a recent version of iOS that looks like they may be planning three different new battery cases, the assumption being that those would be for the iPhone XR and both versions of the iPhone XS, the XS and the XS Max. Of course, they have to change the orientation a little bit because the camera lens orientation changed between those two models. So the current version, besides not being the correct sizing, also doesn't have the correct orientation on the camera lens slot. So if you've been holding out for an Apple battery case, and yes, that is the one with the infamous hump, then your prayers may be answered, because it's looking like Apple may be getting set to release one of those. I don't expect any big announcement. It'll probably just get rolled out. And the original ones did, I think, roll out sometime around the December timeframe. So you may even be able to pick that up before the holidays. I would just keep an eye on Apple's website and I'm sure your favorite news blog. And as soon as we hear about an official release, of course, we will let you know here on the MacCast. But that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and I want to talk to you about Cachefly's web optimization solutions. You know, when websites don't load or load slowly, we tend to lose interest, and each second a page takes to load, it actually costs a company money, about 16% in engagement, and fewer visits to your website, of course, means fewer customers, and that is not good for you. It really isn't good for anyone. So Cachefly has your back with their new web optimization capabilities. All of your content will actually be optimized before it's delivered to your visitors without requiring any development effort from you. And with the recent addition of Cachefly's flexible edge application platform and implementation services, their capabilities reach far beyond those of any traditional CDN. Cachefly's web content optimization solution includes powerful APIs for solving your content distribution problems, on-the-fly, next-generation image optimization, application load balancing, and smart asset delivery. Listen, if your website is tied directly to your revenue, and you know it is, optimize your site's content now. Guarantee the best user experience for all your customers, no matter where they are or what device they're using, and do it today. The good people at Cachefly are going to even provide free optimization consultation to listeners of this podcast. That's right, just for you, free optimization consultation from Cachefly. You can know exactly where your website stands with a Lighthouse score report, and you can learn how Cachefly's web optimization solution can help add 60 points instantly to your score. Visit mac.cachefly.com, that's mac.cachefly.com. Do it today, and you can optimize your website with Cachefly for a much better user experience. And a big thank you to Cachefly for their support of the MacCast. I received an email from listener Dick this week, and I'm going to actually probably throw part of this question out to the community to figure out if we can't help him use his iPod Nano to listen to podcasts and improve the experience for Dick a little bit. He was basically writing in because he was frustrated with syncing his podcast to his old Nano using a smart playlist, or he wanted to use a smart playlist, I guess is what I should say. Because the issue is, if you sync podcasts via iTunes to an older iPod, at least with the current version of the software, at least the version that I have on my Nano that I still have around, I have one of the Fat Boy Nanos, you know, the wide square ones. What I found is when you go into the podcast section, you can only listen to the podcasts by show. So they're all broken up by show. And basically what Dick was wanting to do was have a single playlist that would have all of the episodes of all the different podcasts in order from, and he didn't really specify, but I would assume you'd either want them in order from oldest to newest or newest to oldest. So basically you can go into one playlist, hit play all, and go from episode to episode to episode in a chronological order, but not within an individual episode. And as near as I can tell, there appears to be no way to play all of the episodes in that order. So he had the smart idea of, hey, maybe I can use a smart playlist. I can sync that playlist over to the iPod, and then I can play it back that way. And I think at some point you could do that, and maybe that's something that you're remembering, Dick. But again, I tried to do this, and while you can create that playlist, and you can get it to sort correctly, and it should, if it sorts correctly, sync over to the iPod in that order, there appears to be no way to access that list from the iPod's interface. So you could go in, you can create the playlist, you can set the view mode to view as episodes, you can set up the column in iTunes to say, I want, so you can do it all inside iTunes. You can get it to play that way inside iTunes using a smart playlist. You can even go into the settings in iTunes and you can select that and you can sync that playlist. But once you get it into the podcast app or podcast section of the iPod, there seems to be no way to control it whatsoever, at least not that I could figure out. The only possible solution I could come up with for you, Dick, would be to actually manually go in and change the media type. So select the podcast episode in iTunes, choose Get Info, and change the media type from podcast to music. And I don't even know if you could do that. You might even have to select the podcast and like convert it, so go under the library menu and choose to convert it like you would be converting an audio file from one format to another. Basically, you have to get it out of the podcast section and move it into the music section of your iTunes library. So change the type, the media type from podcast to music, and then you could set it up as a traditional music playlist. And with music playlists, you can sync those over to the iPod. You can go to the playlist section of the iPod, and it should maintain the sort order of the original playlist. So you set up the playlist the way you want it to play inside iTunes, inside the music section, sync that over to your iPod, and then it should work that way. Yeah, it's kind of a pain. I think part of the problem is that Apple has started to ignore iPod owners, and I know there's still a lot of iPod owners out there who I hear from who are frustrated by this, but they feel like, you know, everybody's moved on to the podcast app on their iOS device, and they're saying, you know, hey, this is the way we think you should do it, and they're kind of leaving the iPods, those old iPods, in the dust, and there's a lot of those out there. Apple sold billions of iPods, and it's kind of a shame that they're maybe ignoring iPod owners, and iPod owners aren't getting software updates and enhancements and things like that. So I think that Apple's really not kind of thinking about this. So one of the questions Dick had was, is there a third-party way? Is there some other app that I could do, you know, get to do this? And while I think there are third-party apps, I know there are third-party apps to manage audio content and podcasts on the Mac, ultimately they all sync over into the iPod, and then they're locked back into that iPod software, you know, iPod OS and the user interface there. So I think you're kind of bound by that. There's not really third-party podcast apps for iPods, but maybe somebody has a creative solution out there. Maybe there's an alternative. I know back in the day, you could actually run variants of like Linux on your iPod. So if you want to go that deep into the weeds and get technical, there may be a way to do it that way. But beyond that, I really don't know. But you did get me thinking about this. And actually, I originally answered Dick's question because I thought he was asking about iOS and the podcast app on iOS and answered it incorrectly. He had to write me back and say, no, I meant I was trying to do this with iTunes and my iPod. But actually, there are some creative things that you can do with iOS and the podcast app. I know a lot of people get frustrated by the podcast app, and I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity to talk about some of the ways that you can control podcast playback on iOS using Apple's built-in podcast app that a lot of people don't know about. So by default, I think a lot of people know you can use the episodes list in the podcast app. And when you go into the episodes list, there is a sort option. I think you can sort by the episode name, or you can sort by date added. And you can go into the settings for the podcast app, and you can enable continuous playback, which means it'll go from one episode to the next episode to the next episode. So if you turn that on and you're using the episodes list, it will go through the entire list of podcasts. The only frustration there is, at least as near as I can tell, is that the sort option for the episodes list seems to only go one way, and it only seems to be from newest to oldest. So the newest episode of a podcast going through to the oldest. And actually, for me, I prefer to go the other way. I always want to listen to my oldest podcasts first, and then get to the newer episodes. And luckily, the workaround I found for that is to use what the podcast app calls stations, which are basically, in my mind, like playlists for podcasts, at least inside the podcast app. When Apple moved podcasts sort of out of iTunes and out of iTunes syncing and into its own app, they came up with this concept of stations. And you can create all kinds of different stations, and you can filter them in a few ways. Maybe not as many ways as you can with a smart playlist in iTunes, but you have quite a few options. And you can create multiple ones, and I have a few different ones that I've set up. And you find them actually in the library section of the podcast app. And you can choose to create a new station, and then you give it a name. And then once you've set up the new station, you can edit the parameters of it by tapping the little edit link up in the upper right-hand corner. So you can tap on new station and say, let's call one by release date, right? Maybe we want to listen to all our episodes by the release date ordered oldest to newest. And so once you're in there editing, you get several options. One of them is play. That controls the order which in which they will display and play in. So oldest to newest, newest to oldest. You can choose a toggle to group by podcast or not. So if you do want to have them grouped into podcasts and sort of have it play through all the episodes of one podcast and then move to all the episodes of the next podcast, you want to group them by podcast. You do have the episode option, which allows you to control how many episodes from each podcast are included. So you have the X most recent or all episodes. So you can say, you know, I only want the most recent or the two most recent or three most recent or five most recent, whatever that might be. You can control the media type. So whether you want audio, video, or both. And then there's an unplayed only toggle. So if you turn that on, you're only going to get unplayed podcasts in this station. And finally, there is a podcasts option that allows you to choose which shows, which podcasts would actually be included in this station. So this one's really handy if you have a whole bunch of podcasts and maybe you want to filter them out by little groups of, say, maybe your favorite podcasts or a specific category of podcasts like Mac podcasts or something like that. So if we were taking this sort of question from Dick and building out his playlist using radio stations, the way we would do it is we'd select a new playlist. We'd call the play option oldest to newest. We would turn group by podcasting off. We would select all episodes, or maybe if you only want more recent episodes, you could limit that. The media type would very likely be audio only. I'm assuming he only wants audio podcasts, but if you wanted audio and video, you could change that setting. You would set unplayed only to probably off if you're just trying to get all episodes, you know, oldest to newest. And then under podcasts, you would choose all podcasts. And once you had that set up, then you would have the scenario you were looking for. But like I said, you can create as many of these stations as you like. They all ultimately are accessed under the library section of the podcast app. I have one for just most recent episodes, so it's literally filtered down to I only want the most recent episode of each podcast. I have one that's just all Mac podcasts just separated out, and then I have a separate one for just my favorite podcasts. So if, you know, I'm in the mood and I'm like, I just want to listen through the latest episodes of my favorite podcast, I can go into that radio station or that podcast station and listen to that. And like I said, I prefer oldest to newest sorting because I fall behind on things. And that's the order I prefer. But you can set these up any way you want. And I thought this was a great opportunity to talk about that, you know, maybe a feature of the podcast app that you didn't know about. I think the podcast app gets a pretty bad rap. And I actually now use it as my main podcast app. I've used other ones. You know, I absolutely love Downcast, one of my favorites. Castro has some really great features in it, and it's a great podcast app. You got Pocket Casts, which is awesome and really, really cool. A lot of people like Overcast. So it's great that we have all of these options. But I would say if you haven't taken a look at Apple's podcast app in a while and you had been frustrated by it in the past, go back and take a look at it. I think Apple has improved it quite a bit. You know, it's maybe not the best, most full-featured podcast app out there, but as a basic app, I think it works pretty well and it meets most of my needs. I very rarely get frustrated with it these days. So I thought maybe pointing out this feature, this radio station feature, might get a few of you out there curious. And I'm always open to hear about your favorite podcast apps and hear about how you use podcast apps and things like that. So if you want to share those comments and questions with us, of course, shoot us an email, maccast@gmail.com. Another recent topic we've been talking about quite a bit here on the MacCast is what I call Apple's hidden UI. As a matter of fact, I read an article almost on this exact topic from John Gruber this week. And he was talking about how bad the undo consistency or option is on iOS. And one of the frustrations with iOS is there, you know, there's kind of general standards, but unlike the Mac, there's not these universal standards. Like if I asked almost anybody who was a Mac owner, how do you do undo on the Mac? You'd almost all, 100% of you would say, oh, it's Command Z. Or even if you didn't know the keyboard shortcut, you would know, oh, I go under the edit menu and I choose undo, right? Same for every application that has undo. not the case on iOS, right? There is a bunch of different ways to do it. You may or may not know the default way, but listener Brett does, and he had a question related to that. So I'll let him tell you about what the default undo on iOS tends to be and ask his question about how you might do it in a certain scenario. So here's what Brett had to say.
Hi, Adam. This is Brett in Long Beach, California. Love the show and your conversation this week about hidden gestures on iOS caused me to think about a question I have had for years and years. And that is, when my iPhone is in a cradle, for example, when I'm driving in the car, how do I undo when I can't shake the phone? Would love to know if there's a trick. Thank you.
Hey, I'm going to let you know that there is a trick. And I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that maybe you were also in the car and that iPhone was in the cradle when you were recording that that audio clip. As a matter of fact, I think it came tagged with the specific freeway that you were on, but I won't give that away. Somewhere in California, and it's a big one, so some people might be able to guess with that little hint. But yeah, there is actually a little trick you can do, and for those of you who didn't know the answer to my earlier question, what is sort of the default undo on iOS, and actually Jaron Gruber brought this up in his piece too, how awkward this is shake to undo. Like a lot of apps, if you make a mistake, you literally shake your device, and if you have a 12.9-inch iPad Pro, it's really awkward, I'll tell you that, folks. You shake the thing, and then up will pop a little alert, and it'll ask you if you want to undo or redo or whatever it might be. Now, other apps take the approach of maybe having a little button, which is a nice one, something in the toolbar. It's a little, looks like a little rewind or a little forward button, a little kind of loopy arrow, which is my preferred way of doing it. And then other apps have some sort of gesture, like a lot of art apps, you do some sort of three-finger swipe or two-finger tap or whatever it might be. But that's exactly the point, is like this general inconsistency of the user interface makes it hard to know. You have to remember which app did it which way. I have a bunch of art apps and they all do it a little bit differently. And so it gets really frustrating. Some apps luckily have started to use the button, which I think is sort of the best way to do it. It's always having a little undo button there. It's really, really convenient. It's at least the one that I prefer at this point. But getting back to your question, Brett, yeah, you can use the accessibility features on iOS to actually enable a feature called Assistive Touch. And once Assistive Touch is enabled, and the idea behind Assistive Touch is that if you have limited mobility or you have maybe certain kinds of movements that make doing certain gestures difficult, you can use the Assistive Touch to enable that. So maybe you can't pick up the phone and actually physically shake it. Maybe you need some sort of touch point. And this allows you to do a bunch of different things, including simulating the shake to undo option. So what you can do is you can go into Settings, General Accessibility, and Assistive Touch and toggle that on. And when you toggle on Assistive Touch, what you get is this little white dot on the screen, a little virtual button, and you can actually drag and move that around the screen to position it. So if it, you know, falls, it's always on top, so it might fall into a position where it's blocking some user interface element. You can drag it around left side, right side, it doesn't matter, anywhere along the side, and you can put that little button down. And then what happens is when you tap on it, you get the Assistive Touch menu, which lets you activate other gesture controls. And there's a bunch of them. For shake to undo, what you need to do is you need to tap devices, and then you tap more, and then you'll see there's actually a shake option. And that will simulate a shake motion on your phone without actually picking it up and shaking it. And that would then activate the shake to undo option. Now, that's a lot of taps, as you probably can tell, right? You need to tap the Assistive Touch button, tap devices, tap more, tap shake, right? It's pretty far down there. So if you're finding that you have to do shake to undo quite frequently, you have some additional options with Assistive Touch. You can go into Accessibility, Assistive Touch, and then there's an option to customize the top-level menu. That's the first menu that comes up when you tap on the Assistive Touch button. And you can actually control seven different gestures or things that you can add there. And so you could add shake to that first level menu. Then the process would be tap the Assistive Touch button, tap shake, and you're done. So That's pretty good. But we can even take it one step further. In the assistive touch options, you can also set a custom action on the button. So like double tap, and you can add a gesture to that. So you could set it up so that if you double tap just on that assistive touch button, that little virtual white button, it activates a gesture like shake. So I think there's options for a double tap, a triple tap, maybe a few others. I can't remember everything that's in there. And then finally, if you don't want to have that little assistive touch button up all the time, because it sounds like maybe you're only using this feature when you've got your phone in the cradle in the car, a handy way to turn that feature on and off rather than always having to go into settings, general accessibility, assistive touch, and activate the toggle there, you could add the assistive touch option into your accessibility shortcuts. And a lot of people don't know that this exists, but if you go into settings, general accessibility, there is a thing called accessibility shortcut. And that, you, if you turn it on, means when you triple tap or triple press the side button, it will pop up an assistive touch menu. And then you can toggle on or off different assistive touch features that you've added to that menu. So you could add things like the magnifier, all these assistive touch features, or accessibility features rather, you could add to that menu. So I have mine set up when I triple press the side button, it pops up. I can tap on assistive touch, and then that little white dot appears on my screen, and I can access all of the assistive touch features. Assistive touch has some really cool things too, where you could do like a one finger pinch to zoom, or you can do a one finger, three finger swipe gesture. You tap, you know, an option, and it puts three virtual fingers on the screen, and then anything that you do moves those three virtual fingers. So it's actually a really cool feature. If you've never played around with it, again, go into settings, general accessibility, look at assistive touch. If you need more information about it, a quick Google search can give you a lot more information about assistive touch. But that is the one way I would think to do the shake to undo gesture when your phone is in a cradle. And great question, Brett. I hope that helps you out. There may be some other options for controlling this. You know, one would be to actually use an app that just offers an undo button. But, you know, not every app offers that. A lot of them do support the shake to undo, because that was kind of Apple's default way for doing undo on iOS devices, as awkward as it may be. But great question, and thank you for sending that in. But with that, I think I am going to go try to get some rest, try and get a little bit healthier. I want to thank you for hanging out with me for this episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com, and all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, a tip, something you'd like to share with the MacCast community or here on a future episode of the MacCast, please send your emails and your audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline, that phone number 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you're on social media, you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/maccast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.